the board.
But he said, well, first.
We need to get on with work. We do have a big agenda today, and I ask your forbearance in keeping after it. The next item on this morning's agenda is a recommendation from the Northern Spotted Owl Working Group, their final recommendation. Lois?
Thank you. Yeah. A caucus representative from government, conservation, and forest products will be sitting up here with me to help
Absolutely.
Answer questions. Is that all right? So, let's see. Thank you, Commissioner.
Yes, and good morning.
As usual, you are carrying quite a bit of load. It's almost too obvious to say that everything in society is a lot more complex than we ever imagined it would be, and that includes the spotted owl situation, and I'm sure you're scheduled today. There are two things that I hope that I can leave you with from this presentation, and they're my opinions. I base them on some observations and respect for the messy and difficult task that the work groups have gone through. The first is that the best minds available from all areas of the state have been working diligently to come up with solutions, and while doing so, in all probability, the spotted owl has declined. The second observation is I believe that the board really does need to actively build on the groups working in some fashion so that the spotted owl has a chance to survive, but also so that working forests and the opportunity to keep receiving the ecosystems they provide can survive. At this point, we do need strong leadership from the state. Or I believe the parties can settle back into old patterns. If unengaged, the trust that was built up over the last year can only stick around that long. Is more confrontation showing up in other areas? And so I keep hearing that from various stakeholders that they need the board to take some leadership and act firmly in one direction. And the best, simplest way to look at that is to look at the direction of, does the board wish to include incentives as part of their set of responsibilities in governing mature forests? And if so, what are the steps to build that capacity within your system? The group has some suggestions. Everything in the report that you've received, in the executive summary, and even in my facilitator's statement, has been approved by all the parties at the table. So the contents of the report can be a good starting place for you. That said, I'll just briefly, in order to use the time well, very briefly highlight first the accomplishments and recommendations of the group without going into the details, and then a few opportunities and risk factors. At that point, I'd like to pause my comments so that David Whipple for Government Caucus, Sean Cantrell for the Conservation Caucus, and Mark Domit for the Forest Products Caucus can speak about the consensus package briefly, as well as their thoughts on the non-consensus items. But after their comments, and before we turn to questions, or very much dialogue, I'd like to offer some thoughts on next steps and opportunities to move forward. So hopefully we'll have most of the time for dialogue. So very quickly, on accomplishments and recommendations, the seven recommendations are in the report, and they're also summarized in my cover letter. You saw them last November. We talked about them a little bit also, so I won't go through each one in detail now, but we're happy to answer specific questions after the presentation. What I would like to touch on now are some broader consensus concepts that I believe are of significant value to your upcoming work. because they are consensus directions and they're conceptual, so they don't come out in specific action recommendations, but they do seem to underlie the road to the future. There's three of them. First is the habitat versus owls debate. As was said in the executive summary, this group tackled that and support not just the conservation of individual identified owls, but also support protection and restoration of owl habitat when carried out on a voluntary basis, supported by financial safe harbor and other incentives. The concept of approaching it on a habitat basis is that first point. The second one, large concept, is that endangered species habitat in mature forest ecosystems, not just species by species approaches, are what the mature forest ecosystem needs and the landowner's needs are. So in other words, as opposed to approaching it species by species, this group sees the linkages and has generally landed on an approach that puts all species in mature ecosystems and their habitat needs into one effort, consolidated effort. And the third is that financial incentives are a reasonable tool to meet forest management goals. There's many and various tools that are in the report, from the usual fee and less than fee acquisition to very new ideas of buying options or and payment, receiving payment for ecosystem services. The working group conservation members were really icebreakers, I think, for us on the ecosystem services concepts. And a lot of progress was made. There's a long way to go on that in a state with a high regulatory bar. But the issue of financial incentives and ecosystem services payments is the third key concept that has supported this group that I hope that you will think about. A few comments on opportunities and risks. The working group is individuals, it's disbanded now, are pursuing various opportunities to kind of keep the momentum going towards its recommendations. That shows the commitment that they've had and the willingness to put their money where their mouth is or their time where their mouth is. An example is, most of them met after they disbanded a Fish and Wildlife Service to learn more about the conservation banking system, met with some professionals in that field to start grappling with the issue of how that might work here and what the barriers are that need to be straddled. There is a number of folks who are working on various incentives, funding, ecosystem markets issues, carbon sequestration issues. So individually also, they're pursuing incentives funding sources. Some members have submitted a House Bill 2541, I believe, that one way to move forward in developing a structure for the board that involves incentives as well as regulation and integrates them. And I hope it's okay to say this, but lastly, because I think it matters, is that Conservation Executive Director and Washington Forest Products Executive Director committed to each other in front of me that they're going to continue to meet personally and informally and regularly over the course of this year. So those are the signs of optimism that this thing is not going to just start sitting around, but it needs you, it needs your activity. Because without the leadership, and this is where the risk factors are, there's goodwill and momentum and energy right now that is going to slip back into the old dynamic of fighting if there's not a forum for the varied stakeholders to keep working towards a mutual goal. One outside observer who was very pithy in his comments, I hope the people sitting here will forgive me for saying this, but I quote that person that says, without strong state leadership and a clear effort to move to effective results, one can expect wasteful lawsuits from the left and exploitation from the right. It was pithy, but that's what the fear is, and that's what the risk factor is. But the tenor that we're after is different, and that we had in this group was quite different. It wasn't easy. There was some harmony, and there was some collaboration, and there was some limited trust developed, and that can be lost. A vacuum likes if there's a vacuum, there'll be a retreat in future positioning. So I just would want to stress that if the board wants to continue this different dynamic and do something more around OWLS, the work group report provides some opportunities on how to get started, as do some of the things we're talking about today that underlie them. And I'd like to let each caucus member representative speak a bit on their views of the consensus item and also speak to you about their non-consensus recommendations briefly. Dave?
Good morning again, Mr. Chair, members of the board, David Whipple, Department of Fish and Wildlife. I served on the work group for about 9 months. Initially, former board member Bridget Moran was serving as Department of Fish and Wildlife representative on the work group. I think I came on about springtime and had kind of some getting up to speed to do. What I want to do right now is just kind of convey some general comments and really get into just summarizing where the government caucus landed on the non-consensus recommendations. The process was very interesting. It was at times very positive and very collaborative and very enjoyable. Sometimes the meetings were rather difficult, as you can imagine. And I think in the end, there is a relatively large amount of overlap and consensus, as you'll see in the report. But there are also some differences, and I think you're going to hear this panel try to elaborate on some of those differences in the non-consensus recommendations. The government caucus included Department of Natural Resources, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Washington State Association of Counties, and my agency, Department of Fish and Wildlife. As you've heard and as you've read in the report in the executive summary, we fully support, as a caucus, the incentives approaches outlined in the report. This is an important avenue to establish in order to facilitate habitat restoration, especially any additional habitat conservation that may be necessary. We also believe more work is needed in order to focus these incentives in the areas that are most beneficial to the species. And as you'll read in the non-consensus recommendations, you know, the work group really concentrated on how to achieve strategic contributions. And strategic contributions are kind of the magic words in our minds that you'll see in the group's charter. So they focused and we focused and we came to an agreement on how to achieve those things. Voluntary financial programs, pilot projects, demonstration projects, etc. There's quite a long list, and I won't go into those. And as you heard, we're continuing to work on things like conservation banking, those kinds of concepts. But as you've read, the Conservation Caucus believes that the items in the work group report are not necessarily sufficient to meet the charter of the work group. And the main reason is that the government caucus feels that while the work group addressed how to achieve strategic contributions, we didn't reach consensus in the ability to discuss where those strategic contributions should be located. So right now I'd like to briefly summarize where some of the non-consensus recommendations that came out of our report. The first one can be just summarized as a review of the current SOCEs that are in the current rule. Those areas where spotted owl conservation is happening in the state is based on recommendations from a scientific advisory group about 15 years ago. And the owl situation today, as you know, is in some respects is much different with the continued decline and also the barred owl issue. So we recommended a small technical group review the underpinnings of the SOCE concept using experts from the Pacific Northwest, Forest Service, Fish and Wildlife Service, etc., to make sure that those are in fact the right locations for owl conservation in the state. And there was also a thrust in that recommendation to determine the role of private lands in making those contributions. assessing whether or not the associates are still appropriate, the locations and the functions, whether or not those are still appropriate, and also helping to develop some criteria that could identify any other areas that may be important. And one critical thing I think in that recommendation is a linkage to the federal Spotted Owl Recovery Plan and the recovery team. They are developing the next draft of the recovery plan as we speak, and there may be a very good opportunity for this science panel, if it were to be empowered, to talk with the federal recovery team and actually inform them on the status of efforts in Washington, or vice versa. It could also be very important. Our second recommendation has to do with spotted owls and barred owl interactions. One of the bodies on the federal recovery team, the barred owl working group, is trying to address specific questions related to the species interactions. And we are recommending that the board stay informed of the barred owl working group progress, and also encouraging the board to sponsor a letter to the working group requesting that they address Washington's needs. And those needs, at least as the government caucus saw them, are the following. This group would be hopefully addressing the probability of maintaining northern spotted owl populations in the face of barred owl occupation, and also ways to increase that probability of maintaining spotted owls if necessary. They would also be looking at the probability of any future additional northern spotted owl habitat, whether or not that would be occupied by northern spotted owls or barred owls, and the ways to increase the probability of that additional habitat being of benefit to the spotted owl. A couple other things would be to determine the location and status of northern spotted owls and barred owls in the landscape. I know that the barred owl working group is right now developing and I believe finalizing a survey protocol for spotted owls in light of the barred owl interaction issue. What we're trying to get at here is to be able to determine the locations and the methods where we could create and then maintain an advantage for the northern spotted owl over the barred owl. So there's a whole lot of information that's related to the interactions of the two species that we think is important to be able to help conserve the spotted owl in the state. The third recommendation has to do with a modeling effort. And this would use the information from the first two recommendations, kind of the assessment of the SOCs, et cetera, and the barred owl situation, the interactions with the spotted owl, and use that information to design a roadmap that we, is what we call it, of where we'd like to get the biggest bang for the buck. And in our minds, that really relates to where are the landscape, the strategic locations are to make that contribution towards spotted owls. So it's a locational issue. That modeling effort could also determine the amount of time needed to achieve that strategic contribution, both in terms of what's there now and any habitat restoration or additional habitat development through the use of incentives, how long it would actually take to get to to achieve that important contribution. The modeling effort would also be able to develop habitat targets to focus those incentives, actual acres, and where those should provide the most functionality. I won't take any more time, but in summary, I'd like to just wrap up and say that the government caucus believes the incentives efforts that are agreed to in the report are very important. But we think it's equally important to try to ensure that those incentives are going to the most important places, the most strategic places, and that we are able to track our progress towards achieving that end. And I think that that's an important thing that the government caucus believes is critical, to make sure that we're tracking those efforts and seeing how we're doing towards achieving those strategic contributions.
So excuse me just a moment, David, you talked a little bit about the age perhaps of the scientific analysis of of how well we understand the issues out there in the landscape. Is it true that it's really 15-year-old data that is our most current?
I believe there is data since then, but the rules are based on information from the scientific advisory group that was put together roughly 15 years ago. I think the current rules that we're operating under today were passed in 1996, so the SAG report was just prior to that, and you might hear some of the other folks here discuss that as well.
And what about the science relating to the interaction between the BARD and the FOD? Is there local science here that's current and credible?
I believe that there is local science, Pacific Northwest science. It may not be necessarily peer-reviewed yet because it's kind of a new field of investigation, but there's a lot of work going on as far as what those interactions are. I think some of it is scientific. There's probably equally or most more so kind of anecdotal evidence that there's a significant interaction at play.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sean Cantrell. I'm the executive director for Seattle Audubon, and I'm also the chair of the statewide Audubon Conservation Committee. And I'm here today on behalf of the Conservation Caucus and our participants in the Spotted Owl Working Group. I think I would echo almost everything that you've heard from Dave and Lois so far, so I'll try not to repeat that, but I do want to emphasize that our caucus strongly supports the consensus recommendations in this report and urge you in your capacity as a board, to the extent that you have direct authority or that you have influence with the legislature or with DNR staff or the DNR commissioner, implement these recommendations as quick as possible. There is a lot of very hard work in these recommendations, the consensus points of view that have come forward, and we think that there is very important incremental improvement that can be made for the owls that are represented by those recommendations. Having said that, our caucus, similar to what I think David said, feels that the work group as a whole did not fulfill the full charter charge that we were given. We think that rather than providing for the strategic contributions, that the consensus recommendations are primarily opportunistic, and that's not a bad thing in and of itself, but it does mean that we as a group unfortunately did not fulfill the full obligations I think that you charged us with. So there's more work to be done, and that's where our non-consensus recommendations articulate some of those areas, so I want to take a couple moments and identify those. And there were three broad areas that the conservation community participants identified that we think are important next steps and urge this board to help go forward with implementing these three areas. The first is very similar to the one that you heard from the government caucus, and it relates to commissioning a scientific analysis. Along the lines that the commissioner was asking David a moment ago, the scientific advisory group that came up with the basis for much of the existing rule structure and paradigm did a lot of great work in the early 90s. There's been a whole lot additional scientific evaluation and analysis, but it hasn't been put together in a single analysis as it relates to how the state can and should address owls on non-federal, on private land in the state. And so it's not going out and doing a whole lot more research. There is a need for that, but that's not what we're calling for in this recommendation. What we're calling for is to take the new research that has been done since the last compilation, the SAG report in 1993, and to do an analysis of that and do some modeling. Again, I think Dave used that same term to say, what does the science show us needs to happen in light of the things that have changed in the 15 to 17 years since the last comprehensive analysis was done. We don't view this as something that's going to take years. This is a months-long process, not a years-long process, but it is critical for you as a board to have a good, strong analytical basis for making determinations about the adequacy of existing rules, how to apply incentives, the whole range of issues that are before you. So we think that we would strongly agree with the recommendations that Dave put forward in this regard, and that is on behalf of both the Conservation Caucus and the Government Caucus. The second area that we have in our non-consensus recommendations is that we urge you to help increase the surveys for northern spotted owls. This is starting to get into the area of new research, new data compilation. This is not going to inform decisions in the next 6 months or year or even 2 or 3 years. But right now there is a disincentive for landowners, as you probably are well aware, to survey for owls on their land. And we need to find ways to get a better information, better handle on what's going on with northern spotted owls on all land, but under your purview here, on the private landowners. So there's a variety of things you could do to provide incentives for landowners to encourage them to allow either to partake or participate and conduct surveys themselves, or to allow non-governmental entities such as Audubon to come onto the land and survey for owls. Obviously, there's a lot of issues around that. You would need to provide safe harbors or assurances that landowners aren't going to be penalized for allowing that surveys. But we think those issues can be addressed, and would urge you as a board to help increase that knowledge base around where owls are. The third and final recommendation from the Conservation Caucus is the need to institute some interim protections. The consensus recommendations lay out how to develop a new paradigm for managing for spotted owls in the state, and we strongly support that. But until we're in that new paradigm, there's a need for interim protections. Owls, as I think you heard from Cara Whitaker during the public comments earlier this morning, the owl population in the state continues to decline, and not at a slow rate. It's increasing the rate of decline. The amount of owl habitat on private lands continues to decline. And those two factors need to be addressed and identify ways to provide interim protections for northern spotted owls until we have whatever the new paradigm is in place. Those interim protections can be incentives-based, they can be regulatory-based. There's a variety of ways that you can approach it, but the short-term need is there to make sure that we don't continue to lose known owls. It's not just a hypothetical, but actual owls, real owls out on the land, and their habitat is being lost. So that is where I would leave it, was with your challenge as a board, is to address some of these key issues that the working group was unable to reach consensus on. This can be done through a variety of ways. You can tackle it directly yourself as a board. I'm not sure if you're equipped to do the level of detail and the amount of time that would take. You could request DNR staff or other agencies to tackle it. You could identify a new work group or some other body to assist in this process. Those all have pros and cons, and we stand ready to help you identify and work through what that new process might be. But at the end of the day, it's really important that these issues not simply be put on a shelf, because as I think Lois suggested, there's a lot of very positive goodwill has been developed over the last year during this work group process, but that doesn't last if there's not actual progress on the ground. So I think that in light of the continuing decline of the owl, we need to move forward. Consensus is fabulous. If we don't have consensus, that doesn't mean we shouldn't move forward.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Commissioner and members of the board. For the record, I'm Mark Domit, the Executive Director for the Washington Forest Protection Association. I've submitted written copies of my comments for all of the board members who'd like to follow along. I typically don't read the copies, but I think I will in this case, because I don't want to leave anything out. This was a very important process, and it really was the culmination of a lawsuit against the state and the industry, so I will read my remarks today. This process, which officially ended December 31st, 2009, truly started more than 6 years ago, and before either Sean Cantrell or I were in our current positions as executive directors of our respective organizations. The Washington Forest Law Center began issuing a series of notices of intent to sue the DNR and landowners in November 2003. The lawsuit was finally brought to court in 2007 and resulted in court-directed mediation and settlement, ending in the summer of 2008. I was party to the courtroom hearings and mediated settlement and Spotted Owl work group that sits here before you today. I'd like to focus on how far we have come in the last 2 years. With this group, the stakeholders that have been embattled in court or controversy in the news media for years have finally done something more positive. I'd like to point out how real movement forward has been made on adding to the existing level of conservation for the owl, and renewed level of confidence for landowners that having a threatened or endangered species on their private land is not an automatic recipe for the value of their property to be taken away. I was party to development of the charter, and unfortunately many of the original members are not at this table, except for Sean Cantrell and myself. The state, going through the transition it had, didn't have the same type of continuous representation. There is a special bond that forms between a group that has rolled up its sleeves and wrangled over difficult issues to craft a charter or a vision forward. Sean and I together share those experiences, yet we found a deep commitment realizing the intentions that were forged through the multi-year process. This is why the charter objective to change the dynamic of fear and resistance to the dynamic of partnership and participation by voluntary incentive-based measures means so much to us, and likely to most of the group members. Over the past year, the members of the group have been dedicated to implementing this objective, and I think we've made tremendous headway. The group in some ways accomplished much more than would be expected on an issue that has been so contentious since the early 1990s. And realistically, I want you all to remember, it wasn't a full year, because the state caucus really wasn't in place, as Dave pointed out, until about the third month. So we've accomplished a lot in about an 8 to 9 month time frame. Significantly, the group supported legislation which passed the Riparian Open Space Program, along with the endorsement of rulemaking processes for a proposed East Side pilot project, an extension to the current decertification process. The group also submitted for 2 grants to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for Section 6 funds for the enhancement of spotted owls, a letter encouraging barred owl control experiments, and several joint letters to Congress in support of funding for green energy, forest health restoration. While unofficial, there is a continuing commitment to pursue some of the ideas that arose during the meetings, such as pursuing the Section 6 funding and explore conservation banking and work to implement the pilot projects. While the final report presented to you contains the November 10th report submitted to the board, which contains a series of consensus items, it also contains an addendum which reflects non-consensus recommendations from the Government and Conservation Caucus, along with the industry's response. We support the consensus items below and are committed to moving forward to the implementation of them as follows. Number one, endorse the voluntary financial incentives for landowners to achieve conservation goals. Number two, support a program of outreach to owners of land inside and outside SOCES. Number three, promote barred owl control experiments and research. Number four, approve a pilot project in forest stands with high stem density that limit the functions and longevity of spotted owl habitat for the Eastern Cascades. Number five, support a demonstration incentives project on the Olympic Peninsula to thin young forest and extend rotation lengths to allow flight near spotted owl site center. Number six, support identification and design of a flagship incentives project. And number seven, approve proposed measures of success. We have submitted a letter in the report as a response to the non-consensus items. And while many of the items go beyond the scope of the charter for this group, it is understandable that all of the issues from each caucus were not able to be addressed in such a short time frame. As described in our caucus response on on the report on page 25, we support many of the non-consensus recommendations noted by the Conservation and Government Caucus. Unfortunately, some of the options presented by our colleagues seem to take a step back and request the board to spend its limited energy and scarce fiscal resources on an exercise without consideration for the results of the federal recovery plan or for critical habitat designation. And I want to stress that the federal recovery plan needs to be done. And the state really does need to be a part of that recovery plan and not try to recreate the wheel with either science or its own plan. As stated in our letter, we are proud of the progress of this group, that this group has made during the past year, as we have found common ground on a variety of issues. It is our strongly held view that market-based mechanisms are the only sustainable method to achieve the broader goal of conserving or developing habitat on private land that would contribute to the viable population of northern spotted owls. We believe the group succeeded in following the Forest Practices Board's direction to think broadly and consider new paradigms and to not restrict its thinking or recommendations to the existing state regulatory program or actions that are within the board's purview. We suggest the board explore the following additional market-based opportunities which were developed late in the work group's discussion and could not be completed within the work group's timeline. These are intended to reflect the overlap between the recommendations of the three caucuses. There are five bullets here. First, we suggest that the board support the formation of a forest incentives work group. This incentives group should include representation from land trusts, eco-asset managers, or those with the experience in creating conservation markets. Second, while we believe the Forest Incentives Work Group should begin working on the Spotted Owl Work Group's consensus recommendations, the board must ensure timely implementation of several rulemaking actions it has already undertaken. For instance, the rule development stakeholder group has been formed to develop the rules for the riparian open space program. We are glad to hear that the rulemaking on the East Side pilot project will be heard today at the board meeting and encourage the process and progress for both of those to move forward. Third, the forest products industry is particularly interested in developing a land exchange bank and or a forest-based conservation bank. Fourth, while the concept of habitat zoning is less developed, we believe that the proposal to establish habitat enhancement zones is worth exploring. This would include the role and use of science, economics, and federal permitting mechanisms, technology, and incentives. Fifth, we heard conclusive evidence from leading scientists that the barred owl is a significant threat to the spotted owl survival in Washington State. We believe more attention should be given to this problem. We see spotted owls declining rapidly in areas where habitat is protected in this state and have heard eyewitness accounts of barred owl attacks on spotted owls and harassment which displaced the owls from their existing habitat. The barred owl is, in my view, the most significant problem to the rapid decline of the spotted owl in Washington State. If we don't address it, we're ignoring the problem. Last week, the group saw a presentation from Bettina Von Hagen from EcoTrust that describes a future that we can agree with. This was at the previously mentioned meeting out at U.S. Fish and Wildlife. There are multiple conservation markets in the forest in addition to raw timber for lumber purposes, pulpwood, and biomass energy. There are also potential markets for carbon, water, wildlife, and many other yet to be identified, the ecosystem service markets that you all have heard being talked about for decades. The charter calls for a new paradigm
to change the current dynamic of fear and resistance to a dynamic of partnership and participation. By focusing on voluntary incentive-based measures, I believe we are moving in that direction. We don't want to get sidetracked by doing business in the old ways of simply looking at regulations to achieve conservation goals. Because, and we heard this last week, those regulations in fact can actually take away the future value of any potential conservation market that we might be working toward. And we have to be very careful as we adopt new rules, because we don't want to destroy the opportunity to create conservation markets that might be the future. These conservation markets should be an asset as much as the lumber asset is, the value for forest private investment. In closing, our vision is to move forward with a different process in mind, a process in which conservation and economics can both win. To achieve the win, we recommend the board now take the lead and direct stakeholders to develop and implement the consensus recommendations discussed and discuss additional market-based systems that the work group has supported. I've also passed out a copy of Substitute House Bill 2541. It's our hope that the board will have more direction from the legislature to actually get involved in the ecosystem service development rulemaking as a complement to your regulatory rulemaking. We feel that several of the stakeholders that are on the board now are currently being underutilized, especially a couple of the state caucus members that typically are just a vote on this board on regulations. And the Commerce, Ag, both have a lot of expertise in conservation markets and in economic development. And we think that that weight needs to be shown in a greater role on this board, along with the other stakeholders that traditionally have worked on granting to accomplish needs. An example might be the Dairy Nutrient Program, where you have a Clean Water Act issue and Department of Ag and Department of Ecology figures out how to have a funding mechanism in order to accomplish the goal. We would like to see similar type of ecosystem services developed for forestry. Happy to answer any questions.
So in order to move it to you for questions, I would like to just outline a few thoughts on steps possible for moving forward. And I believe Sean Cantrell will need to speak briefly to some issues that arose during the last two pieces of conversation. We're not going to spend more than a minute on that. Okay. The first decision the board has to make is does it want to proceed with some or all of the group's recommendations or any of the group's caucus's non-consensus recommendations. And, you know, it isn't as simple as a decision as it might look on paper, and I can tell from your faces that it's sort of messy. Even a decision that supports the consensus recommendations may have some ramifications that are unintended, or may have some ramifications that make your lives complicated, you know, such as payment for ecosystem services. Who knows? You know, where some of that's ahead. What I can speak to is next steps relative to the consensus recommendations, and can comment on what your questions related to moving forward on non-consensus recommendations. In terms of options to proceed, I mean, one I think Mark dealt with, which is the first option is start, they're not mutually exclusive options, they're all actions that could be taken. One is deal with the regulatory incentive interface. Ask the question and find the answers, whether it involves a subcommittee or what. What is the board's role in implementing incentives? Would it involve removing disincentives to protect endangered species, for example? What are the funding systems? What are the procedures that would need to be put in place? What needs to be done? So one item is clarifying the board's role and activity on that front. A second one is the work group continuing in some reconstituted, some rechartered fashion, as I think that's what Mark was saying, and I certainly agree that membership would need to be changed along the lines of what he talks about. But if you were to consider that, you need to know that not all these members will be able to continue. Some definitely would. And all would need to be believers in a very clear and crisp charter. And from my perspective, looking at what's working, the pilot projects on the east side and west side, and maybe some additional ones that are habitat-based, incentive-based pilot projects, and more importantly, develop a flagship incentive project. So monitor the existing pilot projects to pull out the lessons, the policy and regulatory and other lessons that could come from the pilot projects. Second, develop the flagship project, which is a large area, undefined at this point, with multiple landowners that would be broadened to deal with all endangered species. It may be used to develop models for land transactions, to talk about what kind of landscape scheme makes sense on private lands in a large consolidated area. So we're talking about cutting some timber where you currently couldn't and putting other areas into much, much, much longer rotations. So this flagship incentive project that's proposed in this report that the group has not been able to define yet, find it yet, and get it put together yet, it will require help from the attorneys, I'm sure, to do it, so that it can work through the pilot process on regulations, is a place where real information can be obtained. A quick comment on the science and the debate about, is the Federal Recovery Plan the source of sufficient science, and should you all wait? That just for your information, the issues underlying science, part of our cost and part of its time, like Mark mentioned. But the other unstated part, which I think you know, but I'll just remind you, is that the fear that additional science will lead to additional regulation. So if you deal with that underlying problem with it, it may make a change. There's a way to make it clear that that would not happen. But you're still left with the amount of time it takes, whereas some of the parties are saying, just get starting now. You don't need to pick high priority sites. We need any land that's potentially inhabitable to be given the chance to have access to incentives. At this point, we're desperate. We can't be picky for the highest criteria land. Having said that, there's also consensus, surprising consensus, on the top criteria of what are the highest priority lands. And there's not disagreement on what those are. There's disagreement on how to define from the concept down to the actual parcels, the land itself. So that could be pursued. The process, I think it's described in one of the to-do pages in your report that didn't get done, related to a process to identify the highest, most important sites. So those areas are probably the ones that have the most, from my perspective, strong and likely opportunity to make some quick and progress to move forward on. It's the monitor and promote the pilot projects that are currently proposed, develop the flagship project along the lines that I mentioned, and to address and resolve the debate on science. Thank you. Quick comment.
Just, I overlooked one point that Mark mentioned, so I appreciate that he raised it. I wanted to mention ecosystem services. Our caucus is very much in support of pursuing this. We are very excited, think that there's huge opportunities there, so I just wanted to add our concurrence with that. I would note that we don't support HB 2541 as currently written. We've offered some additional or different language to I think, make it more workable and appropriate. I'm happy to chat about that if people have questions. But while the specifics of that bill as written our chosen course, we think that the ecosystem services approach is a huge opportunity for the state, and urge this board to help promote and to encourage those sort of efforts.
Thank you. Questions for the work group?
I've got one regarding the research issue, and just so I'm clear in my mind, it's been a while since I've thought about this, but this recommendation to use existing data and findings plus new modeling. Is this modeling that's been done by somebody, or is it new modeling using that existing data? Goes to cost.
Yeah, I'll try to address that. It would be a new modeling effort. In discussing this with internal department staff, I don't get the impression that it would be a very really long and costly endeavor, that I think we can do it with some existing data, and it may even be similar to the methods used in the landscape level wildlife assessments that you'll hear more about later today. But it may not be exactly the same as that process. I know our spotted owl biologists and other folks in the agency have some ideas about how to do it on a relatively short amount of time and as low a cost as possible. We don't have cost estimates for that. And I would say, just to try to expand on this a little bit, that this effort could be and probably should be different for east side versus west side forests and owl habitat. For western Washington, where, you know, people talk a lot about the conservation banking and those kinds of things, and I think that's probably appropriate for the west side, where at least today we don't have the forest health issues that we do on the east side. So it may be more of a reserve-based type of an approach, not to say that management can't and maybe shouldn't take place, but it's a little bit more static in nature. On the east side, the modeling effort could kind of figure out for us maybe where to put efforts in habitat conservation, but also restoration activities, and then also hopefully tell us how long it would take us to go from the current kind of circle model approach, the circle approach that's in the current rules, to more of a shifting mosaic, where over a long period of time that habitat is allowed to move around, and that you once you reach a certain threshold, which could be that answer could be achieved through the modeling effort, you can allow harvest in some areas because it's replaced by habitat in other areas. And this is important on the east side to the forest health issues because of the fire risk and some of the other conditions that are jeopardizing owl habitat on the east side.
If we decide to go down this path, or we have a role, just having some idea of scope would be useful. Are we talking about, you know, something that we can actually do afford or not? The second question is, the industry caucus makes the point that we've got the new federal conservation plan in the works. And so, that will give us this science. And I'm just wondering if you can respond to, you're really looking at something different, or are we doing parallel or overlapping efforts here if we go down this road?
Well, they're doing some extensive work on barred owl, for example, and I think that will be very helpful. We believe we might need to do more on specific areas where we do have original habitat, if I'm going to look at the Pacific Peninsula, for example, where the barred owl population has grown exponentially and the spotted owl population is diving, where you have very good habitat. So we may need to do some site-specific testing as a state in order to help spur the feds along. But we tend to want to rely on the federal effort and its recovery plan to come out for guidance in the overall recovery.
I would just add a couple thoughts, is that the type of analysis and modeling that we are talking about, and I think that the government caucus was referencing, is not currently on any plan or, you know, even wish list for the federal recovery planning process. That's a type of work that they would very much like to see the state conduct, but they have, you know, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife has, you know, communicated to us and I think to our work group that that's not on their vision of how they are going to expend federal resources going forward. So the modeling and analysis to, you know, basically update the assumptions and the understanding for state rules or incentives If we're in fact going to use something more current than 1995, it's incumbent upon the state to do that analysis and modeling because the feds aren't currently envisioning doing it. Our work group suggested that would be something great, and the Fish and Wildlife Service says, yes, it would, and look right back at the state.
Thank you.
So can you give us a little more detail, Sean, about what that might look like? Is it about the interaction between the two species? Is it about habitat, or exactly what are we talking about?
There's multiple factors that need to go in. I mean, there's a series of assumptions that the SAG report had that based on, you know, that the rate of recovery or the rate of decline were happening at a certain rate. Barred owls basically weren't figured as a significant factor in 1995. So those are two of the biggest things that are different out there on the ground. The amount of habitat is another one. What would go on within SOCES versus outside SOCES as it relates to habitat. Those are the types of assumptions and factors that were put in, and we have a whole lot of new data that can go into a model to say, okay, given the information we have now, here's what we project for the trajectory for owl recovery or extirpation in the state of Washington. Here's how barred owls would impact it. So there's a variety of factors like that. Again, it's not a huge new undertaking. I don't want to minimize it. I think Dave makes the right questions of how much time and resources. But as I think I said before, we're talking months, not years, to complete this. And I won't put a dollar figure on it because Dave's agency is probably going to be the one who has to spend it. But we're not talking something that is going to be completely an outlandish amount. I mean, tough budget times, I recognize, so any new expenditures are going to be hard to come by. But if we're trying to move forward here in the spirit of cooperation, I think this is something that will help keep us on that track as opposed to devolving into fights before the board or in the courts or some other venue.
So if I could ask Mark while we're having this discussion, Mark, it seems to me that it might be useful, and in the spirit of this collaborative, and I think we all want to make sure we do our level best here, but it occurs to me, and I'm listening carefully to Sean and to David here, that to know what to do to help preserve the species or lessen its decline, that we need to know why. Is it habitat? Is it species conflict? Would you agree that would be important to know?
I think we've heard throughout the last year in this work group very definitive evidence that species interaction with the barred owl is a substantial factor. And in areas where the owl is declining and the barred owls are rapidly going up, you as a rancher know that if you don't deal with predators, you're going to lose your calf crop, or you're going to lose your next generation. And if we continue to allow this to happen, you can have all the habitat in the world and the owls won't be there. You'll have barred owls as a replacement species. So we do have some ethical issues that we have to deal with here as a society, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife actually hired an ethicist, which I had never heard the term before, to basically figure out, can we actively go out and hunt one species that isn't endangered in order to protect one that is? And it's our belief that we should, because it is an invasive, naturally invasive species, and they aren't at risk. So in areas where we are trying to protect specific spotted owl pairs on good habitat, I think we need to make sure that those animals have an opportunity to thrive and reproduce. The barred owl basically drives the spotted owl into hiding, and it's believed that it's a significant factor in their ability to reproduce.
I guess I'll go back to the question I asked. That is, wouldn't it be helpful to this board to know what component is habitat and what component is species conflict? I mean, to go back to your comparison, I mean, if you do have a predator present, but your cattle herd is malnourished and the calves are dying anyway, and you're throwing stones at the coyote, but in fact the coyote is just taking, it's just is being opportunistic in a situation where the calves are already either dead or dying. I'm just trying to say, wouldn't it be good to know that?
I believe that's what the federal recovery planners and scientists are trying to do. It is their responsibility to develop that level of science. The habitat, we have to recognize, is greatly improved over what we had 20 years ago. There's been large federal set-asides in the state of Washington that have basically, they've eliminated the harvest down to 2 or 3% of what it used to be. We have the SOCI program, which is protecting habitat on state lands that wasn't in place prior to this, and specific pairs of owls have much enhanced habitat over what they had 15 or 20 years ago, and the decline keeps happening as we have a booming population for barred owls. So it may not be conclusive evidence, and maybe we never will have the specific definitive science on how much habitat is enough habitat, but in areas where we know we have pristine habitat, especially up on the Olympic Peninsula, and we see the barred owl being pervasive and as I said before, on an exponential increase, and the barred owl populations tanking, along with eyewitness accounts of barred owls actually attacking spotted owls and either driving them out or killing them, then we know that we have evidence. So I don't think it's one of those situations where it's an either or. We are continuing to enhance habitat.
I think it's fair to say that the work group as a whole has proposed its recommendations with a group understanding that those are both factors, and not to wait to define them, to proceed with trying to. We urged in a letter, you'll see, the federal government to start doing more on barred owls, and the state as well as federal government to work on some of these recommendations. So just to be really clear, the science discussion would be happening in tandem with proceeding, with the assumption that certainly are both. Okay. Everybody agrees it's both.
Okay. Question, Sherry.
Not a question, just a comment, Commissioner. About 4 or 5 years ago, Cindy Mitchell came before this board and made a presentation on habitat. It was a pretty comprehensive report. Took into account all federal, state, HCPs, private ownerships, and so forth, to be able to look at what habitat is out there. And I think it was pretty clear that the habitat has increased just by the growth period of time. So that might be something that could be reintroduced to the board, since I think only Tom and I were here when that presentation was made, to try and, you know, help. You were here too? You know, to kind of help get our minds around actually what kind of habitat is out there and where it is at.
I think that's the point has been made, and I think it's clear the habitat situation is much better, and I think that's great. But I still think, I mean, just listening to this panel, still not clear exactly what the pivotal issue is that is contributing to the continuing decline. There's some anecdotal evidence and there's some obvious observations, but I don't hear anybody saying that there's definitive science. Other questions? Carolyn.
Let's see, I had some. I have been thinking about the recommendation made by the government conservation caucuses about at least gathering and analyzing new data that has come about since the early mid-90s, and that I was concerned about how long that would take, so I was pleased to hear that was a month or maybe months rather than years. And my question was, if we were to ask for that, could that work be done concurrently with other initiatives that we'd be following based on your consensus recommendations?
Most definitely. We think that there is a huge amount of work that can and should be done on the consensus recommendations, moving the pilot projects forward, barred owl research. There's a lot of that needs immediate action. The fact that we need this, you know, compilation and analysis and modeling on the science doesn't need to wait, or one doesn't need to wait on the other. They can go forward together. At least our caucus feels strongly that the answer would be a wholehearted yes.
Okay.
And then I had a couple of comments about Mark's, the industry position, and Mark's comments then this morning particularly. And I was thinking about needing this updated body, for example, for your fourth recommendation on page 3, to move into habitat zoning. It just seems like if we are going to do some work in habitats, that having a full understanding of the most current up-to-date science would be an essential part in that. So it seems like there's some connectivity there with some of the recommendations that you're making, which I think are interesting to pursue. And then developing conservation markets, the work that I've done in development conservation markets in land use suggests that you almost always have to have a regulatory framework to at least provide a process so everybody knows what the rules are and so forth and so on. And so I think that it's not an either or. I think to move into a robust conservation market in any number of ways to, you know, mechanisms and so forth, you have to have some framework that government has to step up to the plate and recognize it as legitimate and commit to following through on those trades or whatever sales that occur. So
we agree with that comment, and we believe that that framework is in place. The current regulatory system around spotted owl and other ESA programs, whether it's marbled murrelet or forested fish, is a substantial baseline already. What our concern is as new regulations get advanced, without consideration of conservation markets or the ability to develop a conservation market, the concept of additionality starts taking place, where if it's already been taken, the value's already been taken by regulation, then there's no way to develop a market around it. So we feel like we've been living under a listed species of owls now for at least a decade and a half or two decades, and the regulatory framework is in place so that future work for enhancement of conservation should be done in a marketplace. We also believe that conservation markets and ecosystem services could in the long run be a substantial private sector investment, and a valuable portion of the asset that private land owners actually own. But if the value is continually taken away by regulation, then you actually create a deterrent for the development of that marketplace, which I think we all are in agreement needs to be developed.
That's exactly right. If I've been involved with voluntary efforts with agriculture, and the problem, everybody was in agreement with what we needed to move forward with incentives, voluntary, all of that. But unfortunately, the state had taken away a lot of the basis for incentives. So the folks at the local level, you know, although everybody wanted to do it, it was really hard for a farmer to step up to that plate and take that risk without knowing that there would be some benefit over time. So it's a critical issue for us.
Yeah, that's a good example of the questions from the board on that regulatory incentives interface, and what about the baseline, and what can't be done to affect what your goal is.
Questions from the board?
Yes, I just wanted to thank all of you, first of all, for all the hard work that you put into this. Seeing some of it, and I know it's been a long, long process. Clearly, it seems like there's a lot of work yet to be done. And I think it's safe to say that Department of Fish and Wildlife, regardless of various federal efforts, is going to take this very, very seriously. But I was interested in hearing briefly from all three of you, if that's okay, on what, when Lois is talking about, you know, developing a flagship incentives project, just continuing the work of the group in general, who do you see, in just your own opinions, as being the most effective body or group of folks, and you don't have to go into detail, but just maybe for the benefit of the board on moving forward.
Very briefly, I think first and foremost there needs to be leadership from the state. You know, that the stakeholder groups outside of government can do all the imploring and agitating that we want. If the state isn't going to put time and resources in it, and I know it's an extraordinarily difficult decision for Fish and Wildlife or DNR to say how they're going to allocate staff resources in a time like this, but there needs to be staff time for the state agencies to help move something forward. An outside facilitator is great. I don't know that it's essential. We need to have leadership, though, from the state first and foremost. Beyond that, I think that we need to make sure that we have landowners. I think Mark or Lois earlier mentioned group that wasn't involved in our work group process that would be important as we try to go with a flagship incentive program is some of these land trusts or the people who have more direct experience with these ecosystem service payment issues that, you know, such as EcoTrust that several folks have mentioned today. So those would be the types of people. I'm not sure if you're going to get hands raised for individual participation right now, but those would be my types of suggestions.
And in terms of, as that's passing by, Neil, in terms of individuals, we've all talked about this, and we're looking for frontline folks, experience with the modern economy, and experience with land trades and land trusts, but really as high a level as possible.
I think Sean and Lois did a good job of summarizing, but I might just add one thing. It's the industry's feeling that this changing of the dynamic of fear to one of opportunity is really a different kind of an idea. If an endangered species lands on your property, right now it devalues private asset values. We believe that landowners should actually be able to profit from enhancing the survivability of that species because they're doing a good thing for the public benefit. So that type of incentive flagship process that we would like to envision for the future is one that actually incorporates a different way of thinking, that you're not going to get punished for having an endangered species on your property because you probably weren't the only thing that caused that species to decline. But if you can enhance the survivability of that species, then there needs to be a certain set of guarantees that it's not going to drive you out of business in the process. The economics needs to be melded with the conservation. And while we do that, we can create a whole new paradigm of how we do business for conservation and how we keep working lands in place. So it's a concept around this flagship that we would like to spend more time trying to develop. It's kind of the thinking behind the legislation that we're trying to promote. And we believe it's the Forest Practices Board that is the most well-represented stakeholder board in the state, really, for these specific issues. We've got conservation, we've got labor, we've got tree farmers, large and small, we've got people from all five state agencies. You have an opportunity, we believe, to do this, maybe even under your current law. And we think that really this board could take the lead in either through its subcommittee processes or through delegation and then follow up at the board like you did with the Spotted Owl Work Group to help develop the flagship.
So Mark, going back to your earlier comments about the fear factor, aren't there existing programs already in place to help landowners who are concerned about that to be able to take sort of preemptive action, the safe harbor agreements, so that they can be somewhat insulated from the fear factor?
They're very, very expensive and very burdensome, and I think we could do better. So that I think that's one of the things that comes out in this discussion. There's a few companies that have done them, and it takes several years to develop a safe harbor agreement. There are other types of individual agreements, maybe for specific areas. I think we could do much better at developing those.
But it does give them certainty.
It does if you have a safe harbor.
Right.
I think we should enhance more of those types of programs. I think that we really have a very small menu right now.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like to just make a couple of comments on that. I agree with Mark in that, you know, and you, Commissioner, that does provide certainty. It does take a long time and some resources to actually get those done. I think and I'm going to venture out a little bit, but some companies, I think their management style may fit more with, say, growing suitable habitat for species like the spotted owl, and some landowner business models don't really lend themselves very well to that. But I think that if we were able to capture the expertise from the land trust, et cetera, to be able to allow those landowners that don't normally grow habitat that's needed, to be able to capitalize on that. And if we were able to, and I think we discussed this in the work group, from a programmatic level, well, first of all, identify kind of, again, that analysis and modeling effort of where on the landscape those contributions are going to be most strategic and how do we get there. So if we have that roadmap and we have some incentives lined up through EcoTrust or whatever conservation banking or whatever mechanisms might be out there to get landowners to think differently about actually growing habitat because they can benefit from it, then if you couple those two elements with possibly a programmatic type safe harbor agreement or some other kind of agreement that the state could lead, that then the landowners could sign up for if they chose to enter into that program, then that may be kind of the three-legged stool that's needed for success.
That's an enviable model.
It would be. Nationwide, it would be enviable.
Or you think big right away.
Yes. I question back to the owls, and our barred owl and the spotted owl. The science that you've heard from relating to the effect the barred owl has on the spotted owl, have you got a good broad base of input there?
We heard from several different PhDs.
I don't have the list in front of me, actually, but we have had a number of presentations, both from, is it SEIU fellow? Is there a barred owl expert down at Oregon Forest Service? Courtney. And the Washington fellow in Clay Allen, his name. Who's better at this? But we've had a number of well-known and respected scientists come and speak and give presentations and basically fill us in on their research.
Get them that rest.
Yeah, we have listened to a lot of folks. It has not been the same thing as a systematic review of all the research with a summary of the results. We heard directly from the scientists involved in the work. It's been very educational and interesting. I think everyone came out with certain common understandings, but it does not replace what conservation government is talking about.
Just real quick to add is that in the name of not repeating work that others have done, our work group recommended some specific questions to, and I think the government caucus had some additional questions to, the federal barred owl working group, which is part of the recovery team that U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has convened. And that working group has representatives from the state of Washington, from several federal agencies, from private timber companies, from Audubon. So that group may not be the total expertise that needs to come together, but that is a great place to start. And so that's where we as a work group channeled our specific questions and recommendations for additional things they might want to look at or do, rather than saying, well, let's set up sort of a parallel process at the state level.
One fear I've always had on this whole, the idea of removing the barred owl is that we have the spotted owl as our little darling today, and it's possible if we remove this barred owl that we can still lose the spotted owl. And wouldn't that be sort of a sad thing? 10 years down the road, we hammered down the barred owl, and then we still lost the spotted owl.
You raised the question I think Mark talked about, the emphasis. just know that we've had a huge debate, and it continues to some degree within the Audubon family of the relative merits of controlling, removing, potentially lethal removal of one bird species in order to benefit another. we have come to the conclusion, Seattle Audubon, the state of Washington Audubon, Oregon, the lead Audubon group there, Portland, have all said that barred owl control experiments need to be done. You know, using it, jumping right to management and going out widespread barred owl management through control, whether it be lethal or otherwise, is not merited yet. We need more information to know where, how much, will it work, et cetera. And so those are the questions that Audubon and I think our work group says we need to get those answers. And in order to get those answers, we need to do some experimental removals ASAP.
I think it would be our feeling that that those type of removal programs would be in occupied habitat first. There's a lot of unoccupied habitat out there now, and it's because the spotted owls that were there are gone, primarily, I think, because of the growth of the barred owl population. But focusing on places where you have owls, live owls, pairs, particularly, to protect, I think would be more logical than just a broadcast control project.
I was just going to remark that it's a very complex issue biologically, and trying to target a given area might seem good at the onset, but if the barred owl is very mobile, then that may be of limited value. But I mean, that's why we need some science, and that's why I think at some level science is going to be important in helping the board make decisions about just where to proceed. But we've got some more questions for you.
I was just going to say, following up on that, from having heard some of the presentations by the scientists when I was observing, that it's not like a door closed somewhere at the border of British Columbia and Washington or Idaho, and that the barred owl's going to stop coming. And it sounded like that it was coming across because we've reforested across the northern tier, and so it's been an easy step over and then head south once it hits the Pacific Ocean. And so it seems like that if you were to do a removal program, that the best you could do would be to buy some time for the spotted owl to come up with adaptations that would allow it to coexist at some level. And that's sort of the question. I don't think we're going to be able to get rid of the barred owl because they're the next generation's already on the way in, and from what I heard.
I agree with that.
Yes.
Just to follow up maybe on Anna's question, and you know, there's obviously a lot of work and still a lot of questions that are still unanswered. Lois, you know, you mentioned one of the recommendations or one of the actions of this board would be to recharter your group, okay? And I guess I just want to get a feeling from each of you, what does that accomplish, if anything? And if that did take place, I mean, are we talking for 6 months? Are we talking for a year? I mean, I don't want to just be doing it just to be doing it. Okay.
Well, I'll just very briefly, because I think you want to hear from the others, state that there would definitely need to be some changes. Not everybody can do it. And we would want to focus on the getting rid of some specific log jams. We would want to work very closely to get agreement that it can be done in the time frame before we even start. So just that as an intro, let me thank you.
I don't add a lot to it. Deadlines are very focusing, so a short time frame versus a long one was what I would add in there. Some, I think we've already touched base on some of the additional interest we'd want to be on there, and a really clear charge. I think we had as one of the culprits who helped write the recommended charter that you all approved, I'll take responsibility that it wasn't as clear in some places, that we fuzzed over some differences. And I think a charter that is more explicit of, yes, you need to address these five questions or one question would be more helpful. Yeah, we may not come to a conclusion, but we will know what it is we're answering or not answering.
I guess from my perspective, this work group has been very successful. In light of the fact that it didn't have all of the right people at the table, because people were trying so hard. And we did try to bring in some expert testimony, but it was fairly brief when we brought in some of the land trusts and some of the folks who are involved in developing conservation markets. It's our feeling that a new reconstituted group needs to have a bigger focus on development of incentives programs from experts that have that type of expertise, from both the industry and the conservation community, as well as the state and potentially federal folks that have actually developed safe harbor programs or conservation markets for water quality enhancement or water or habitat quality enhancement programs. I don't believe it should just be focused on the spotted owl either. I think the whole concept around ecosystem services is a broader topic, with the spotted owl being one chapter in that work group's work. And I think we would like to see the state kind of consolidate its resources so that we don't have to create one for each listed species.
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest, how I would feel about expanding it to other species. I think in the long run it's the right way to go, no doubt about it. I'm a little concerned, I think, more with complicating the discussion around multiple species. We've got an owl issue on our hands that I think we need to solve, and I think I agree with Sean in that if the work group was reconstituted or a different one was appointed, I think the questions do need to be very, very specific. And I think it would be helpful, probably to all of us, as you folks think about this, is what is the roadmap? What are the integral pieces that we have to put together in order to come up with something that's workable for everybody, that doesn't eliminate the additionality issue that the forest industry is faced with, but we also achieve meaningful conservation, and we want to change that paradigm. So, but I think the specific questions are going to be very important.
Norm?
Two of you have suggested that there's a need for an additional scientific review process to continue on after this report, and one suggesting that we may have that information in place, or there are other processes in place that can be utilized. And I'd like to have you discuss that just a little bit more, if you would, because that's certainly that would be a consideration that we may have upcoming as a board. And I look to some of the reports that this board has received, the Courtney report, which was done for the federal status review, the recently completed federal recovery plan that I guess is now under a replanning process and will be due soon. So specific question, if you could try to focus on this, is to what degree have the state agencies, the various caucuses been involved in those reviews that I've just mentioned and that are ongoing right now, whether directly or indirectly, and what do we expect to learn in addition to that if we were to engage in our own review that will not be coming out of those reviews that have either been completed or that are underway. And you can skip the modeling part because we've talked about that already, and I did get that message.
Well, I think that we as a state are involved to some extent with the Federal Recovery Plan effort. We're on the Bardal working group, developing the survey protocol and things like that, and trying to understand the interaction piece. I don't know how far it's going to get us in terms of really understanding the full implications of the interactions. A lot of the efforts that that you alluded to, at least, well, I think a lot of them were at more of the federal level, and that I view our efforts more targeted towards what, like the charter says, what are the strategic contributions that non-federal lands should be providing in the state. In other words, we have the SOCES, where the conservation is intended to take place. So my question is are the SOCEs still valid and appropriate? A lot of the other efforts that you spoke about are at the federal level, and the federal recovery plan isn't necessarily going to address what the state what the state's role is and what the state's responsibility is for the conservation of the species. So we are involved, but I think we have to take some of those pieces of evidence and some of the testimony, and by the way, I wasn't on the work group when that was provided, but a lot of those folks talk about the federal recovery plan and kind of that scheme. It doesn't necessarily get down in my mind to the detail that's needed to meet the board's anticipated outcomes through the regulatory means.
And correct me if I'm wrong, the most recent recovery plan, and I think the Courtney report, both did include the whatever contributions there are from our existing regulatory and SOCE system, did they not?
They did. The conservation support areas, they recognize that those are on the books and they're part of the state regulatory scheme for the protection of owls.
Thanks.
I would just add to what Dave said. Again, you mentioned the modeling piece, so I won't beat that horse, but the other key things that we would want to see this scientific analysis do is, in some ways, it's collecting all of the information, because you've highlighted three or four, and there's been, you know, a whole lot of other good evaluations and analysis that have been done around specific pieces, around barred owl issues, around, you know, the SOCEs, around a variety of the factors going on. But if the state is going to have a management plan, you know, not a formal management plan, but a strategy for how to deal with northern spotted owls and make a significant or a strategic contribution to the owls' conservation, we need to have all of that information consolidated, you know, with the current information. That's what the SAG report did. Again, it was before my time, but my understanding, and having read it and talked to people who were around at that time, is the SAG report attempted to consolidate and bring together all these different pieces of information, different studies and analysis, and said, okay, so what's our best read of what's the status of the owl now? What are the assumptions we're making for what's going to happen in the future? And we need to do a variation of that. We don't have to have a huge, long, involved process to say, okay, what's new? What's different? You know, the assumptions. Barred owl is one that we've talked a lot about. The impact of the SOCEs. The value of habitat outside of SOCEs on in circles outside of SOCEs. There's a variety of assumptions that are embedded in the current regulatory or incentives-based programs that we have in this state, and they're based on the evaluation that was done 17 years ago. So what we're suggesting is, let's update those assumptions. Which ones are still accurate, which ones have been proven to be wildly optimistic or pessimistic or not even considered. Let's get all that information and say, okay, based on what we know today, here's how we may need to change those assumptions and what that means then for state management of owl habitat, whether it be through incentives or regulations. This scientific evaluation doesn't dictate what the tool is for addressing the management, but it's making sure that you have a good sense of not just the how, which is the tools, but it's the where, it's the why, it's how much, for how long, those sorts of questions that, from our perspective anyway, and I think this is, I won't put words in Dave's mouth, but my understanding from the government caucus is at least some, if not all of those, are questions that we think need to be updated with more current data than, you know, what was available at the time of the SAG report.
When the SAG report was created, it was fairly shortly after the spotted owl was listed as a threatened species. And I think that our level of understanding and information was pretty limited at that point in time. And you suggested that a new report would be essentially a compilation of everything that we know now, all brought together, but isn't that what the federal recovery plan is supposed to do? And I'm concerned about us engaging in a process that is simply duplicative, and when maybe our focus needs to be something a little different about how, again, how that information is used, not the collection of that information.
I would encourage you to talk directly with Ken Berg or Paul Henson in the Oregon office. But what I have heard and what I think our work group heard is that that is not what the Federal Recovery Plan is going to do. They're going to be looking at a much larger scale, you know, the 60,000 foot level, and that they won't have the type of information consolidation, let alone the analysis done, that would be instructive enough for you as a forest practice board to make decisions about where to apply this incentive, how to change that regulation, the sort of nuts and bolts work that is incumbent upon you to do is, if you rely upon the federal recovery planning process, first off, we don't know when it's going to be done. We're hoping very soon, but that, you know, waiting for them may not be a recipe for success. And even if we do wait for them, the fact is that the level of information and detail and analysis that they provide may not be, well, I will not be sufficient, in our opinion, to help inform the decisions that you all need to make.
What may be helpful, if you can do it sometime, is to identify what specific questions you think need to be answered that are not going to be answered in that plan.
I'd be happy to help facilitate from our caucus to do that, definitely.
Other questions? We've spent quite a bit of time on this, and it's worthy. I know, we've got one more over here. I'm just looking around.
We're going to have a chance to sort of wrap and sort of give our impressions. And I agree with that. I was going to ask for a little sharper point on what are these questions, how would they be used, so we can make a decision, and also what kind of resources. I mean, we don't allocate resources, the departments do, but that's a concern to me. But I certainly endorse the idea of keeping the group going. Just the consensus recommendations is quite a work list. And Lois said a clear, crisp charter. Well, we've got, and that would be great, but we have 9 consensus items here to work on, and I don't think they're in priority, but I would love to get to make some progress on incentives, on the ecosystem values issue, all these consensus items. So I don't think we have a choice but to try to keep a group going, working on some work into some of these, and maybe we need to prioritize them, but I just really think that that's the right way to go.
Okay, and I hope you understand, after lunch we'll probably hear from staff about what their recommendations are.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say that while the group hasn't talked much about that, they just focused on their deadline. I'll stick my neck out and say I don't think anybody wants to just keep it going same old, same old. I mean, get something new going, get some more people in there, and get a little focus on the highest priorities.
All right, well, I'm sure I'm expressing the sentiment of the board, and I want to thank all of you for your diligent effort to bring this report to the board. It's obviously a very complex issue. There are lots of things in play, but we deeply appreciate your effort and your being here before us to take questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I think with that, it's just a little after noon. I'd like to, we'll take our Zoom recess here and reconvene at 1 o'clock.
Exactly.